I've also asked if you look at also the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila chapter 1 with the same verses, the chapter Shloki Bhagavatam, and the what Prabhupada calls the prelude verses are also there. So today, we're going to just set the scene for these four verses. Because what we have here in this presentation, answers by citing the Lord version, is the primordial archetypical transmission of spiritual knowledge in our disciplic succession. Got that? Primordial, archetypical, transmission of spiritual knowledge in our disciplic succession. In other words, this is our founder, Lord Brahma. And this is where he receives spiritual knowledge from Krishna. So this is a model. The whole setting and the scene and the way everything happens is, and the way Prabhupada discusses it, is a model for us to follow. Of course, it begins in perplexity. Lord Brahma finds himself, kind of comes to consciousness, and he's sitting on a lotus flower in the middle of what looks like nowhere. And he looks around, and he can't see anything up, down, sideways. And he sees the stem of the lotus disappearing into the primordial gloom down there beneath him. So he wonders, you know, there's certain questions arise. Who am I? What am I doing here? What's this mean? Which is actually the state of a living entity. Because you may notice what happens to us is that somewhere along the line, sometime I guess, maybe between the ages of 12 and 15, we suddenly notice that we're here. We kind of wake up a little bit and come out of this trance of childhood. And we begin to wonder, you know, here, look, here's this thing, this is me. This is this, I'm sitting here, there's other little entities running around with human bodies, but somehow or other this one is me, and I'm looking out from behind the pair of this eyes, and other people are looking out from those eyes, and why should I be here, and why should they be there, and what is it, who is it that's here anyway, and how did I get here? And what am I doing? Here I am, I got hands, I got legs, I got feet, I got mom, I got dad, you know, and I'm just thrown in, you know. Heidegger, the existential philosopher, has this notion that we're sort of thrown in, you know, we're just thrown into existence. And here we are. So this is Brahma's condition, only even a little more mysterious. Very few cues for picking things up. The only thing he notices is that there's the only connection to anything is that lotus stem going down. So he climbs down it. And to seek out his origin. So that's the clue, that the notion is there. Where did I come from? What is the origin of everything? And this means, see, right away we're targeted on the absolute truth. You know this word, absolute truth? Prabhupada uses it. He says, at the very beginning of Bhagavatam, the Srimad Bhagavatam is targeted on the absolute truth. And he says, the concept of the absolute truth is different from the concept of God. Because God or Ishvara designates any controller, but absolute truth means what? The ultimate source of all energy. And therefore, there can only be one absolute truth. There can be, in principle, many gods, because God simply means a controller. The idea of God doesn't contain within it the idea of oneness. Whereas the idea, what he's saying, that's what he's saying there. Whereas the idea of the absolute truth contains within it the notion that there can be one and only one such a thing. The absolute truth. So Srimad Bhagavatam is targeted on the absolute truth. And when we talk about Krishna, of course we use in common parlance the word God all the time. But what we really mean when we say Krishna is absolute truth. That's why Prabhupada's expression, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is so felicitous. Because it indicates this Godhead, the absolute truth. That's what this word Godhead really means. It's a word for the absolute truth. And Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. It was also nice for those people who had so many bad connotations with the associated with the idea of God, that we were really happy to find something, some other term. Because now, of course, when I meet someone that says I don't believe in God, I discover that I don't believe in the same God they don't believe in. And they don't know about Krishna. And once they find out what we mean when we say God, or what we mean when we say Krishna, then it's a whole other realm of thought that they're being introduced to. So Brahma is looking for his origin, for his source, therefore absolute truth. Going down to find his origin, because that's what the absolute truth is, the ultimate origin of everything, the ultimate source of all energies. Janmadhyasya yataha. He can't find it. Somehow or other there's something, it doesn't say exactly what, that stops him from going down to the end of the lotus. And Prabhupada says in the purport that indicates that you can't get there by your own effort. And then what happens? What's the next thing? I know I didn't put this on the reading assignment, but we should remember this, huh? He hears a sound. And it wasn't boogaloogaloo, right? What did he hear? Ta-pa. Right. He hears a sound. Ta-pa. Ta-pa. And that's his initiation. Upanaya. He gets initiated. He approaches nearby. And he hears this sound, pa pa, which indicates austerity. He understood this was the order of the Supreme. And it couldn't be anybody else because there was no one else, there was no one around. And so he went back on his lotus and then he performed penances and austerities for 1,000 years. So that's very nicely discussed. Here by Prabhupada in this in the purports, how Lord Brahma did that, and then he saw the whole spiritual world. The Lord became pleased with him, and this because of his penance and devotional service, it's understood that it's devotional service, and then he. The Lord, Brahma saw the Lord's abode, and the Lord himself appeared before him. So he saw the entire spiritual world by this. And then, so there's quite a description of that. And Prabhupada's very, very careful to say this. Following in the footsteps of Lord Brahma, any person, even up to this day, can attain the same perfection by following the path of the Paramahamsa as recommended herein. That's called following the path followed by the Paramahamsas. That's in the purport to text number 18. And then in the next text, 19, that's where it says the Lord shook hands. Prabhupada says the Lord shook hands with Brahma. He took him by the hand. Prabhupada says he shook hands. But it says sprishan kare. You're touching him or taking him by the hand. Being pleased with him, so he wants Brahma to do his duty, and Prabhupada says Brahma's got two duties to discharge. Not only to create the world, but the purpose of creating the world is to bring the living entities back to Godhead. So also Brahma has that function, to deliver the conditioned souls. Prabhupada says a great responsibility. I'm reading from the purport to text 19. And this is Brahma also does his duty very perfectly, not only by generating the living entities, but also by spreading his party for reclaiming the fallen souls. The party is called the Brahma Sampradaya. And any member of this party to date is naturally engaged in reclaiming the fallen souls back to Godhead, back home. The Lord is very much anxious to get back his parts and parcels, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. No one is more dear than the one who takes the task of reclaiming the fallen souls back to Godhead. Anyone preaching the mission of the Lord in the line of the Brahma Sampradaya is always dear to the Lord, and the Lord, being satisfied with such a preacher of the authorized bhakti cult, shakes hands with him in great satisfaction. So that's what I said. This is the archetypical primordial act, especially for our Sampradaya. So Brahma is doing, and his achievement all applies to us today. And Prabhupada very explicitly brings this down to today to say we're members of the Brahma Sampradaya. This is the founder of our Sampradaya, and we have to follow in his footsteps. And whatever happens, as he does, so it will also go with us. We're also called, Prabhupada mentioned somewhere, the Sampradaya of the book. Because the Acharyas in our Sampradaya are noted for writing many books. And Brahma has one of the things in his hand is a book to indicate the Vedas. He's called Veda Garbha. He's impregnated with the Vedas. The Sri Sampradaya has got money, but we have books, and we don't have so much money. Of course, we try to get as much as we can for them. So Brahma becomes, the Lord becomes pleased with Brahma and tells him that he was the one who ordered him to undergo penance, and this is the way to achieve me by this perfect penance and devotional service. And then tells him that this penance is actually his internal potency by which he also operates. So now we come to text 25, 167. Is this where I said to start reading?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Because here we see what begins to happen. We have the beginning of this, where Brahma asks four questions. Because the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, there's four nutshell verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, are the answer to four questions put by Lord Brahma. So I just wanted today to go over those questions. Because this is what he does. He asks questions. The Lord has said, here I am. And Brahma so places questions before him. Paripashnena, that means submissive questions. So he's eager to know. So he asks these questions because he wants his desires to become purified. So in text 26, he asks the first question. May I please be informed how, in spite of your transcendental form, you assume the mundane form, although you have no such form at all? Paravareyata rupe janiyam te tvarupi pinaha. That how you assume, by mundane form is here meant the universal form. Although you have no material form, still you fulfill this, you create this universal form. And also in here is the notion of trying to understand the Lord's transcendental form. Prabhupada, in the purport to text number 31, lists the questions. These were Brahma's questions. One, what are the forms of the Lord, both in matter and in transcendence? So, two kinds of forms. This is what's here. Para and avare, in the matter of mundane and transcendental nature. What are your forms? So that's the first thing he wants to understand, is the nature of the Lord's form. Whether he's personal, impersonal, both, how, and so on. That's the first one. The status of the Lord's existence. Is there anything higher than Krishna? Or than his form? And so on. So question number one. So first thing he wants to know. In spite of your transcendental form, you assume the mundane form, although you have no such form at all. First question. So that means he's inquiring, according to Prabhupada, about, there's no purport to that particular verse here, but later on Prabhupada says that's what it means, this question. Second question, text number 27. And please inform me how you, by your own self, manifest different energies for annihilation, generation, acceptance, and maintenance by combination and permutation. So the question is, how are the different energies of the Lord working? To boil it down succinctly. Because you do this. Now, by your own self, you manifest your energies. You create, maintain, annihilate this world. Now, how do these energies work? So that's the next thing. Out of your own self. Then question number three. O master of all energies, please tell me philosophically all about them. You play like a spider that covers itself by its own energy, and your determination is infallible. This is a separate question, according to Prabhupada's purport of the Acharyas. And the question is, what is the relationship? Or how does the Lord play with his different energies? What are the relationship? He says here, how does the Lord play with his different energies? That is to say, what is the relationship between the Lord? And how does his energies work? And what is the Lord's relationship with those energies? And then finally, in text number 29, please tell me so that I may be taught in the matter by the instruction of the personality of Godhead, and may thus act instrumentally to generate living entities without being conditioned by such activities. And then it continues in 30. O my Lord, the unborn, you have shaken hands with me just as a friend does with a friend, as if equal in position. I shall be engaged in creation of different types of living entities, and I shall be occupied in your service. I shall have no perturbation, but I pray that all this may not give rise to pride, as if I were the supreme. So Prabhupada says this, how may Brahma be instructed to discharge the duty entrusted to him? So those are the four questions given in these verses that he asks. And so each one of the four Chaturshloki Bhagavatam is an answer to one of these questions. The nature of the Lord's form. What is his illusory energy? Or what are his different energies? How to understand his energies? Do they exist? Do they not exist? Do they, you know, so like that. The third question is, what is the Lord's relationship with his energies? And fourthly, how may we actually attain a devotional service of Krishna? How to understand all of this? All right, so those are the four basic questions that are answered. So these are the four questions that devotees should always have. And we should have complete understanding. Because all of this is Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the Srimad Bhagavatam in a nutshell. Krishna spoke it to Brahma. Brahma expands and explains it in the course of talking to Narada Muni. Narada Muni to Vyas, and so on down the line. But this is where it starts. Everything that's in Bhagavatam is folded up into these four questions. And then it gets expanded in the course of telling and retelling. So any questions so far about those four questions?
Could you run through just the questions in simple terms of the simple question?
Yeah, well, it's really done by Prabhupada here. If you look on page 176, these were Brahma's questions. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Text 31. 31, Prabhupada calls, that's when the Lord begins to answer, right? So Prabhupada calls it the prelude. 31 and 32 are the prelude, and then 33, 34, 35, 36 are the four verses. So in the purport to 31, Prabhupada gives it very nicely. One, Prabhupada says like this, Lord Brahma is the topmost devotee of the Lord within the universe, and therefore the personality of Godhead replied to his four principal inquiries in four important statements, which are known as the original Bhagavatam in four verses. These were Brahma's questions. One, what are the forms of the Lord, both in matter and in transcendence? Well, just you could even say, what are Krishna's forms? Two, how are the different energies of the Lord working? Three, how does the Lord play with his different energies? So one is how the energies work, and the next is what is the relationship between the Lord and those energies? And four, how may Brahma be instructed to discharge the duty entrusted to him? He wants to be instructed so he does it in the right way. Okay, so it's right there that Prabhupada gives in this book, 176. And then the thing to do is to read over these four questions, go back to the verse, read the verses, look at the Sanskrit word for word, go back and forth, then look at the answers, and keep going like that. Gradually we'll understand what's happening. So we have three different. We have. Then these questions come to us first in the four questions. Then there's Prabhupada's little summary, and then there's the four answers. So by the time we finish, we should have a good grasp on what all this means, because these are very deep questions. And when Prabhupada translates it in one way, in the verse, he picks. It's so deep. Just like the Atmarama verse has so many different meanings and implications. And when you translate it, you take a slice of those. And then you read the purport, then you find out some more and more and more of them. So these are very deep verses. And just in one translation, nuances are left out. That's why we're fortunate that Prabhupada's done the four verses, also in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's done them again, just so we can get a idea of different ways of translating the same four verses. Okay, so that's clear. That's what the questions are. What is Krishna? How do his energies work? What is relationship with him? And how do we become how do we understand our relationship with Krishna? How do we become established in our relationship with Krishna?
Sometimes it mentions Lord Brahma's, or it mentions that the post of Lord Brahma is occupied by a pure devotee, and sometimes by Krishna himself.
Yeah.
And does Krishna himself
ask himself questions? He's been known to do that. Anyway, this is our Brahma. Sometimes Brahma's not always a devotee either, not very nicely anyway. So this is our Brahma. We want to go on. Yeah? You have a question about this? Just about these questions now. Is that clear what he's asking?
Yeah, it's very, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
According to the duty of Brahma, that he's supposed to maintain this material universe, if I think about it, if I know that there's many universes, many different Brahmas, and within every universe, a similar law working, that Brahma is the maintainer of this particular material condition.
Creator, really, not the maintainer.
Creator also, but behind what... Supersoul exists even within Brahma, so
yeah, of course.
Means what is the act of Supersoul within Brahma, and what is the purpose, or what is the act behind all this happening to construct this material uniform where we're supposed to educate ourselves?
What is the act?
Yes, what is the act of Supersoul behind this
I don't know what you mean by what is the act.
Behind construction of this material.
Well, what do you mean? What are you asking when you say his act? What is he? Why does he do it?
What is the pattern of the action?
What is the what?
Pattern.
Pattern of the
action. What is the pattern of happening behind?
Brahma's creating. What's Supersoul doing in that act of creating?
Well, what's Supersoul doing? He's giving inspiration to Brahma. This is what happens, right? This is what happens. The Vedas are eternal, right? So they're always up there, right? And this word Veda, as we know, is knowledge. And the Vedas always exist. There's terms in the Vedas like Indra, Chandra, Surya. Sometimes Indra, Chandra, and Surya don't exist, but the Vedas always exist. This means Indra, Chandra, and Surya are type names or archetypes. So what's in the Vedas is eternal. What it describes sometimes exists and doesn't exist. And what the Vedas describe, it doesn't describe, it's not that the world exists that the Vedas describe, is that the world is modeled on the Vedas. So that the Vedas are what is called in Greek philosophy, the world of the forms. You know, the Platonic world of the ideal forms. What really corresponds to that is Vedas. That's what the Vedas is. In Christian thought, the Stoics, it becomes Logos, the eternal reason of God. You know, the beginning of the Gospel of St. John, in the beginning was the Word. The real word is Logos, which means discourse, reason, and so that's why it's translated there as word, but it's with a capital W. There's also a notion of something called Sophia, or wisdom. So this is the eternal realm of the Vedas, which have the archetypes or the models for everything. And Brahma is called, the post of Brahma, what he does, is given this word in Plato's philosophy, demiurgos. So in the Timaeus, the Platonic account of creation is there's an original creator God, who's called the Demiurge, who has a vision of the realm of the forms, including the supreme form of all forms, which is called variously the good, the true, or the beautiful. You ever in classical, the good, the true, and the beautiful, in Platonic philosophy, the description of the absolute is variously known as good, true, and beautiful.
Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. Yeah.
Or just Sat, Chit, Ananda. Sat means what is good or eternal. Chit, full of knowledge. That is the realm of knowledge or truth, consciousness, and Ananda, bliss, which comes from beautiful. So you can see where this stuff comes from. Sat, Chit, Ananda. So, and then, having had this vision of forms, then he takes what's already existing primordial matter, according to Plato, which is in a state of chaos, and using the blueprints he's got from here, the archetypes, to create the world modeled on these archetypes. So that corresponds to the Vedas. So here we see what actually happens. This is a kind of an abstract description from Plato. That sounds very similar to what we see here in this Brahma Samhita. There's Lord Brahma, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Brahma Samhita too. He has a vision of the Lord, who enlightens him in the Vedas, and then he creates according to the Lord's direction. And under the Lord's... And actually he gets from the Lord the seeds, the bija, of the different creations. He's described elsewhere as like a gardener, who takes the seeds and makes them grow. But the actual seeds are there eternally, kind of tucked away in the Brahma Jyoti, and he pulls them out. So the Brahma Jyoti is not undifferentiated. It's full of stuff. Everything. Okay? I mean, that's just the...
So there would be a one description of mechanism how it gets developed, but behind that, there is already you said there is some supply that Brahma is working with.
Oh, yeah.
So what is the construction question of the organization of that supply behind.
Well, that's ultimately the what's in the Vedas. And that's given by Krishna for the creation of the material world, which is modeled in a perverted reflection of the spiritual world.
So in that area, the mysticism starts within that area probably, right? When you're asking.
Well, I'll talk to you about that later. Let's get into mysticism a little bit here. Mysticism comes up in this prelude, text 31 and 32. The Lord says, Gyanam paramam guhyam me yad vijnana samanditam. He says that this knowledge, jnana, which means scriptural knowledge, that's in the scriptures, is parama guhyam, extremely secret, mysterious, esoteric, hidden, guhyam, parama guhyam. And he says, jnana and vijnana. So Prabhupada translates vijnana in the word for word, it's realization. And in the purport, he spells it out in connection with devotional service. So you have to understand that Brahma is not just getting jnana, but also vijnana. Knowledge and realization. When we say the word self-realization, for example, when we talk about the process of Krishna consciousness, what do we mean by this word realization? It means it's not theoretical, but it's practical. And by practical means that we perceive it directly by our own experience. So that, for example, jnana may mean, for book knowledge, I accept the distinction between the soul and the body. And I accept that I am not this body, but a spirit soul. Right. Say I believe in that. That's jnana. Do I experience myself as a soul? What is my attitude toward my body? How do I feel about it's growing old and it's dying? How attached am I or detached am I from happiness and distress? Then it becomes a question of vijnana. Because you can find in philosophical circles, there's a lot of literature about, you know, the relationship between the soul and the body, and guys go and discuss this stuff. I mean, the mind-body relationship or the soul-body relationship, there's shelves and shelves and shelves. And there may be philosophers who are convinced, you know, that the soul is separate from the body. But still, there's no vijnana. And why is that? Because they're engaged in sense gratification. Because as long as we're engaged in sense gratification, we're forced to identify ourselves with the material body on a practical level. That's why a devotee who's strictly following Krishna conscious principles, maybe the philosophy comes alive to him when he says, I'm not this body. He means it. And it convinces other people because of his realization. But if he should have some kind of fall down, immediately this idea, I'm not this body, becomes like kind of thin and attenuated and abstract. And although he hasn't changed his beliefs, it doesn't grab him anymore. And he's not very convincing to other people. Aristotle said that when there's discourse, he says there's three things that are convincing, make an argument convincing. First is pathos, which means emotion, and he says that's not really very, it's very transitory. People become fired up emotionally, and then it goes away. He says a little more convincing is logos. It means reason and argument. But he said the thing that really is the most convincing in a speaker, ethos, character.
Character,
yeah. A person's character. You know, like we have the word ethnic or ethnology or ethnography, you know, and ethos, character. This is somewhere, I don't know where he said it, I can't.
remember, but
so that's what, that's the potency of a devotee's preaching. If he's actually following the principles and has vijnana, then one's preaching becomes potent. And that's because of this ethos. If you're not following, you can remain on the Logos platform forever. That's the middle point. You know, you can bring up so many arguments, I'm not this body. But what actually makes it convincing is when you see that a person who says, I'm not this body, is actually unperturbed by happiness and distress, is actually happy under any and all conditions. Then you say, wow, this person is really, you know, he's acting on that platform. That's vijnana. So Prabhupada says that that knowledge means information that's contained in the scriptures. But it is scientific knowledge because it is realized by the participant, by the candidate, by his own experience. So another translation that Prabhupada has of vijnana is scientific knowledge, theoretical and scientific. And by scientific, Prabhupada also uses the word practical. He said it's practical. By practical, Prabhupada means what we would say more today, doable. It's experiential. So that's what Brahma said. Not only did he have some propositions about God, but he sees them. It's realized. It's his direct experience about the nature of Krishna. And that's what Krishna consciousness is about. It's about bringing about not just jnana, but vijnana. Therefore, it has to be realized in connection with devotional service. So, Prabhupada uses various terms for this jnana, vijnana. Theoretical, practical. Practical, scientific. Realized. These are the various terms that he uses. And then because of that element of vijnana, oh, he says, and also jnana vijnana, he says, confidential, more confidential. Another place he uses those translations. Because sometimes by jnana, he takes it to mean, you have to look at the context. I mean, these words, you know, they go all over the place sometimes. But jnana sometimes means knowledge that I'm not the body. And vijnana is the fuller knowledge that I'm not only not the body, I'm soul, but I'm servant of the Supreme Soul. So sometimes he includes that as vijnana. And that's why he mentions here particularly the practical aspect of vijnana, the implementation of jnana. The real implementation is devotional service. And because that is absent in the Mayavadis, that's why they're on a precarious platform. There's not really vijnana. So the two things are there with Brahma. Jnana and vijnana. By which you will know this knowledge that is parama guhyam, extremely secret. And there's a theme that develops in here. Prabhupada uses this word in the purport. I want you to notice this word, mystery. Guhyam can also mean a secret or a mystery. Guhyam. And later on, we'll see, when Prabhupada discusses Chatushloki Bhagavatam, he discusses the mystery of love of God. He says, Lord Krishna instructed Arjuna, this is the purport to 31, in the mystery. Where is that? Oh yeah, without such qualifications, because Arjuna was a devotee and a friend, one cannot enter into the mystery of the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, one cannot understand the personality of Godhead unless one becomes a devotee and discharges devotional service. This mystery is love of Godhead. Therein lies the main qualification for knowing the mystery of the personality of Godhead.
That's mentioned in the first verse of the ninth chapter.
All right, that's where, in Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. Yeah, it's the Raja Vijaya Raja Guhyam.
No, the verse before
that. Oh, the before that, yeah, Guhyatama.
And then Gana Vigana Saita.
Uh-huh, Gana Vigana Saita. Prabhupada, you know, when he had the BI, wanted to put up a publication, he said the name should be Savigyanam with Vigyanam, science, because it was scientific. Right? That was what he said, Savigyanam. Along with Gyanam and Savigyanam with Gyanam. So that has to be there. This mystery of love of God. So we'll see more about what that means. Then, Krishna says, now I'm going to let... Then he says, all of me, as I am, aham. Here we see the introduction of this word, aham, this all-important word, by which the first of the four verses, yavan aham yathabhavo. As I am, myself, yavan, yathabhavam, as I really, as I exist, yad rupa guna karmakaha, the forms and colors, rupa means form, also means color, guna, qualities, karma, activities, tataiva, so let it certainly be, astu, let it be awakened, huh? Tattva vijnanam. So here's that word, tattva. Tattvataha, you know, Krishna says, only by devotional service can I be known. Prabhupada says, translates that, as I am, tattvataha. Tattva, in truth, in reality. You know, you take this word in Sanskrit, tat, which means that, and you add this suffix, tva, which means the same as the English N-E-S-S. So, you know, it's just thatness, you know. What's really there, you know. So that's why it means substance, principle, you know, tattva. So tattva, the absolute truth, you know, what's really, really there. So tattva vijnanam, direct spiritual vision of the absolute truth. It's all going to be awakened in you. Astu, let it be, he says. Let it be awakened in you. Mat anugraha, by my mercy. So that's, of course, how it happens. That's the one of the path of devotional service is so exemplary, because look what you get. You get instruction from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you're a Mayavadi, you have to haul yourself up by your own bootstraps. Your proposal is that I am God. And so Krishna just steps aside and says, okay, enlighten yourself. See how far you get. But somebody who approaches the super soul as a servant and says, please instruct me, Krishna says, oh, well, here it is. Now I'm going to lay the whole thing out before you. Now you can see everything. I'm going to show you all of me. And all of me means all of everything. That's what we find out in these four verses. Because when you know Krishna, you know everything. So this is a breathtaking, epic scope. You know, when we say these syllables, Hare Krishna, we exhaust the content of reality. You know, the whole ontology is contained in those two words, Hare Krishna. Because Hara is Krishna's energy and Krishna is Krishna himself. And that's all that there is. There's Krishna and Krishna's energies. And when you've said that, you've said everything. And since nothing is different from Krishna, when you know Krishna, you know everything. That's what follows. So that's what we're going to... So this tattva vijnana means I'm going to just lay it all out before you, as much as you can know. There's not that Brahma, you know, knows everything about Krishna. Even Krishna is still trying to figure out everything about himself. That's what he's doing as Lord Chaitanya in some ways. But as much as possible, that's given to Lord Brahma. So this is. Anyway, there's things in the purports to these verses which we'll go back and look at again when we discuss the original four verses, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and I don't know, we have to have an exam? Some kind of... And either we'll have an exam or a sum up or something, huh?
Or some, maybe even something they can do in class, out of class the day before so you can have a class.
Yeah, we'll find how to do something with scissors and construction paper. test your again. Okay. So that's the lesson plan. Any questions? Yeah? Well, Brahmas are usually individual jivas. So I suppose in a whole plethora of universes that come out of an exhalation, many of them have jivas who are taking that position. A couple of places, because there's no qualified employee, the boss has to come in himself and do the work. That's so Krishna takes the position himself. As I can understand that, sometimes, as Prabhupada says, that when a living entity, in one place Prabhupada says that living entities, when they come to the material world, they take their first birth as Brahma. So some of them are people who are lording it over material nature. Some of them get promoted. Some of them may be successful Mormons, for all I know. The conscious goal of the Mormons is to become a lord of the universe. Underneath the previous Lord, there's like an infinite recess, a regress of Brahmas, you know? That's what they really want. Isn't it? If you actually get into the... But anyway, so the Brahmas do not necessarily have to be... Every universe, you have a Brahma who's the head of the Sampradaya. So far as I know, this is talking about the Brahma of this little universe. It's a little universe. He only has four heads. Other Brahmas have many million, you know, many, many heads. And it's described that it's a little universe, one of the tinier ones. But this is the one that in the 50th year of Brahma, Lord Krishna advents himself. That's all I know, that it's about, this is our Brahma. So otherwise they're working under different conditions. Because if it's the first birth of living entities in the material world when they fall down from the spiritual sky, then they have a much further career, so they're not very successful after that. They still have so many material desires. But this Brahma is a pure devotee. He goes back to Godhead, so the fates of them are different. That's about all I can say about that. Okay.
So they don't always, even though he's in charge of the Vedas, they don't always head up Sampradaya.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not said that there's always in every universe a Brahma Sampradaya. I've never seen that stated anywhere. But I've always taken it that at least it's true about this Brahma and this universe. But since they're in different kind of conditions, different Brahmas are in different kind of conditions, different things happen. It's hard to, what do we know? Who cares anyway? What's going on in other universes?
Well, makes appreciate him specifically.
Yeah, well, we should. He's the founder of Sampradaya. And this is very good to read because this is really, Prabhupada ties this in directly to we're Brahma's party, this Brahma Sampradaya. He has his mission. He sends out his party to reclaim the fallen souls. And he also mentions, by the way, interestingly enough, in that purport where he talks about Brahma's party, he mentions people who cause a disturbance. Listen to this. He says, there are many renegades from the Brahma Sampradaya whose only business is to make men more forgetful of the Lord and thus entangle them more and more in material existence. Such persons are never dear to the Lord, and the Lord sends them deeper into the darkest region of matter so that such envious demons may not be able to know the Supreme Lord. So he specifically mentions them who are renegades from the Brahma Sampradaya. It sounds like at one time they were, members of the Brahma Sampradaya in good standing, but went off in different directions.
Did Prabhupada have someone specific in mind when he was...
Anyway, there it is. Upasampradayas, right. Upasampradayas. In other words, owls, bowls, garanganagaris, kartabhajas, to name, you know, a few of them. Those are upasampradayas. They're people that start out in the right party and then mislead people. So that's also, you know, he mentions them, the renegades. So we have to stick to the party line, Brahma Sampradaya party line, and so we have to follow just like Lord Brahma, how he remained always the servant, and heard nicely from Krishna. Any other questions about this?